Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Uninitiated, you might be wondering why that's a relevant song. And if you follow some of the bandwagon nerds' wonderful polls and some of their jokes and PC Tunney's humor within itself, you'll know that that is a song from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, which is kind of relevant for the holiday we have upon us. So, as you can tell from the people not doing intros, or I should say the person not doing the intro, Chris Platt is on assignment today because holidays, stuff happens, you know, turkeys, stuff's on fire. I don't know. He's just not here. So I'm doing the intro, and with me, though, it's just a two-man show, but what would I be without PC Tunney?
Oh, well, thank you there, sir. He's all done with his cosmetic cat surgery. He's got the tail. He's got the whisker implants, screw implants, so it was nothing to do with that today. He's actually turkey hunting. And not the turkey hunting that you would think, like out in the woods in a blind, calling in a turkey, everything else. He's doing a little urban turkey hunting. He's out looking for a turkey. And that's as much as I'm going to tell about his situation. But nonetheless, let's pull back the curtain a little bit more. We're recording very early on a Wednesday afternoon because we're both ready to get our Thanksgiving weekend going. So we're going to kind of get in here, give you a little bit of our opinion, and we're going to get out of here and hope everybody has a great Thanksgiving. But Andrew, you have a very interesting circumstance story-ish thing. I'm not really even sure. It seems like it's good enough for this show, though, on how you were able to accomplish this afternoon special recording, Thanksgiving edition of Pod is War.
Yeah, interesting, not from the overly comedic sense, unless you like the, oh God, I work with morons kind of sense. So, yesterday, HR came up, because I was in the office, because we do a hybrid kind of in-and-out schedule, and told everybody in the office that as of about 2 weeks ago, there was a person who came in contact and tested positive for COVID. 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks. Now, even if you don't get the fast test, it doesn't take 2 weeks to get those answers. So I'm amused by this because it's ridiculous. But the reason why I got out early is basically because they decided to do a full scrub, so told nobody to come into work. And then my boss basically kind of told me, log out whenever. It's a holiday. He's not going to bust my chops. But the irony of all of this is the fact that my job is probably the most reactive, sloth-like job in the entire fucking world, because we went into quarantine in March. Now, it's November as of, it's Thanksgiving. Starting in September, they finally had plexiglass put up in the lunchroom so that you had to keep 6 feet distance. In September, already 6 months after the whole thing started. And now we're going to do a deep clean because somebody tested positive in November and 2 weeks after it happened, which means she probably made them aware of it late last week or maybe a day or two earlier or something like that. So I work with imbeciles. That's why I figured it was a good talking point, because it's like, It's really sad, the type of people that are in charge of businesses, especially this one that's been around almost 100 years, but, you know, at this point it's one of those, it's been in the family for a while, so, yeah, who has it now ain't the same people that started it. You know what I mean?
It's funny that people didn't realize that, personally, I think part of the reason for the re-spiking of COVID and everything else, like, we knew it was going to happen, but I think something that fueled the fire, not prompted it to start back up again, but when kids go back to school from age 6 to age 22, they are more apt to socialize and congregate outside of school when they're going to school together than when they're not. And if you don't think that contributed to it, from, you know, mainly I would say more of like the 7th grade and on kind of thing, because you figure before middle school, 6th grade, 7th grade, you're generally doing whatever your parents are doing. Once you get to that age, you can be left with your friend or left at a mall somewhere or go to a movie by yourself, yep. Right? So they're not being policed as much because they get it 90, whatever, I don't know exactly how many percent, it could be lower, don't see any symptoms at all, you know? So it's hard to see why they kept running all these schools back. I know parents have schedules and things of that nature, and it's hard for their kids to be at home from school and stuff like that, but it's the problem that we didn't get on it early enough and we didn't stay with it long enough. That's just my opinion.
No, I'm right there with you that I agree. People got lax at some point, and as soon as holidays kicked up or even election and all this other shit, as soon as stuff started opening up a little more and the restrictions loosened, then everybody's like, oh, it's over. We're done. Okay, there we go. It's the same thing as if you were grounded for 2 weeks and your mom kind of let you out a little early because she felt bad that you were moping in the corner, you know, and then, you know, you do something stupid and you're grounded again. So that's exactly how this feels. So, yeah, we're stupid and we're grounded again. But it takes so fucking long for my company to do anything. It's painfully, like, amusing in a sad way to me. It may not have been exactly the best story, don't get me wrong, but I really, really am concerned for upper management and how exactly you get there, depending on the person, you know what I mean?
Well, you want the silver lining?
Sure. Is it a playbook, or is it something different?
I got a beer. You got a beer. We're both off of work tomorrow. And
that's true.
Now we're going to pontificate, sometimes positive, sometimes negative, about wrestling. How's that sound?
Definitely sounds better than a deep scrub and possible COVID test. So, hey, there we go. Let's get to the first question.
Pot is war. Deep scrub.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Real quick, open your internet browser. Head on over to ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot. Make yourself look more aesthetically pleasing wherever you're going. There's something for everybody there. Tons of great t-shirts. Do it soft style, just like Miranda, the queen of soft style. And while you're there, I'm sure you could try some form of promo code. I'm sure you could just put that in your internet browser and figure it out. Turkey might be it. That might save you. I'm not going to give you 100 bad ones like Chris would. Shout out to Chris, who's literally turkey hunting right now. But head on over to ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot. There's something
I wonder if that promo code would work. Turkey hunt.
Turkey
is
hunt.
Is that too many letters, you think?
Oh, you could mix up some letters there and put in something really bad. So, ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot. There's a t-shirt for everybody, and what a great stocking stuffer. All right, Andrew. So what did you think of the 30th anniversary of The Undertaker, the tribute they did at Survivor Series, the whole way he came out and ended the show, all the people that they brought down to the ring? What did you think of everything, first off?
I suppose the pomp and circumstance was nice. You know, bringing back a bunch of the old faces, some of the rivals that we talked about earlier, and you know, last week or 2 weeks ago, whatever that was, when you had Greg come in and do the run-in. And, but I don't... Personally, I felt like it fell a little flat just because of the simple fact that we assumed he retired 3 years ago when he left his coat in the ring, and it feels like that whole 3 years ago was kind of a retirement tour, and like he was just kind of dragging ass to get to 30 just for this moment, and the moment was just kind of like, all right, well, we knew this was coming. It's a little less special to me. Like, it still was cool. It was still nice to see everything, and he officially put it into words that he was retired. But I'm also, I guess, a little disenfranchised by it, because, good God, he's been on, like, the interview scene for everybody. Not just Stone Cold that popped up after Survivor Series, but, like, Hot Ones, he kind of answered similar questions, and he's been breaking kayfabe for, like, 2 years almost.
I suppose, though, when you do such a good job at not doing that, and are the probably, like, the last cowboy, you know, out there completely maintaining kayfabe for the most part towards the end of his career, that when it happens, he's all... yeah, he's got a TikTok account, too, now, right? I mean...
Yes, exactly.
I was disappointed they didn't announce him for the Hall of Fame right away, although maybe they're not going to do a Hall of Fame if there's no fans, and I would be okay with that, because it's not like you need to be in a gigantic hurry to get Undertaker in, right? It's not like he's Ric Flair's age or that kind of... I mean, that being said, you never know when people are going to go. I get that. But health-wise, you don't really see The Undertaker. Like, he's going to be around for a while. So you can wait a year. But I thought it was weird that he didn't get into the ring or interact with those guys. Just all came out to the ring, and then they were gone. And that was the end of it. So that was kind of weird to me. I guess I loved seeing all those guys come out, and I loved seeing those guys interact with each other. That was probably my favorite part of Survivor Series. Ric Flair actually hugged Mick Foley, and you seen him hesitate. That's real. They don't hate each other. Like, they wouldn't not save each other's kids, but they don't necessarily like each other for a long time.
Well, now, the question is, did he hesitate because of that? Or did he hesitate because he had to ask, like, are you okay with this because of, you know, COVID and social distancing? Because I saw a lot of people on Twitter were like, I got Ajita seeing all these, like, over 50 wrestlers in the same ring piled next to each other. It's like they're mostly the at-risk kind of thing, especially, like, the Godwins and Flair and stuff like that. So it's like, was this really a great idea?
I think the coolest thing I seen too was who was already out there. Show was out there, Hardy was out there, whoever came out before them was out there, and then the Godfather's music came on, and they were all like, they weren't like dancing because they were trying to get the Godfather over or because someone told them to dance. They heard the Godfather's music and they wanted to just kind of shake and move a little bit, and I thought that was really cool. You could see it was natural, and that's kind of the respect and nostalgia part that I really liked as far as those interactions.
Fair enough. No, I'm not disagreeing about that. It was nice to kind of just see them naturally react to things and just get along and enjoy each other's company. Kind of felt like one of those Raw reunion shows without being, like, over the top and forced down your throat.
Completely agree. So what do you agree with me then? Like, last thought on the Undertaker thing, that likely they may not do a Hall of Fame thing without fans this year. What do you think is going to happen that way? And do you think Undertaker, when he goes in, would go in by himself?
You have to think they should be making the pool smaller every year, because having, like, 7 posthumous, multiple random distinction people, like, you know what, they had, like, Bruno Sammartino beforehand, or not even him, because he actually got voted in or brought in when they finally buried the hatchet. But there's so many older, like, I think Argentina Rocca's in there, and, like, Killer Kowalski and shit like that weren't around for it, so they just put him under, like, what, the Hall of Famer, or the Classic or Legends wing, whatever that is, and then there's the Celebrity wing, and then there's, you know, the guy who I don't know, tied your shoes wing, whatever the fuck it is. So it'd be nice if it kind of turned into more like the Baseball Hall of Fame, where there's one or two, if there's any, like, make it actually feel special again instead of just, like, a participation award, because that's kind of become the meme. I know everybody's like, well, Coco Beware's in there, anybody's gonna get in there, but that also becomes the logic, because WWE gets to make up their own parameters because it's their fucking Hall of Fame, so who gives a fuck? But it'd be nice if there was something more tangible, and there's one or two or just a big name and maybe a manager or some shit like that.
Well, let's talk about the difference in eras too, because Coco Beware, like, did he even hold any titles in WWE? Because if he would have come along now, and yes, I know that his actual gimmick from them would be kind of dated right now, but, like, he was a smart guy. He knew how to work and everything else. He would have made it somewhere. Like, he would have won tag titles or 24/7 titles or IC titles or US titles nowadays. I think he's absolutely at that level. just to kind of make a broad stroke comparison to the 80s and 2020.
Yeah, but there were four comparisons, but you know, everybody's going to be like,
in the 80s there were four belts in all of WWF, and one of them was around the waist of one person mainly. Okay, so there were three belts, and he wasn't a tag team guy. So, you know, now you compare to what you have now. I'm just saying, I'm not trying to get Coco Beware over. I'm just talking about the difference in times.
No, I get you, and I think it's because of the difference in times that the perception is that he was just the jokey enhancement talent kind of guy. So people will compare, like, Otis to him, you know what I mean? Or, like, the Leon Ruff thing to, like, a Coco Beware thing. And that's a perception problem, because everybody's going to, you know, people shit on Meltzer saying it's his opinion. You're like, the fucking Observer Hall of Fame doesn't matter because fuck, it's Meltzer. And they kind of do the same thing with WWE. Like, well, that Hall of Fame doesn't really matter because it's their own kind of thing. It would be nice if they kind of heard that and adjusted to be a little more of an elite of the elite kind of thing, or there has to be like a big push, which that could be a storyline within itself. Like, if somebody really liked somebody from back in the day, you could make a push for that, like a campaign, turn the entire storyline for a character into campaigning for somebody to get in the Hall of Fame, instead of just, we're announcing this because we can. You know what I mean?
The funny thing is who do you give that power to? Because the people that say that it's opinion, right, and I get it, and it's one person's opinion or this opinion, and usually it's the person with the most money's opinion who owns it, his opinion. But if you equate it to sports, like the people who write about it, they actually vote in to the Hall of Fame, right? So who do you really want to give that power to? Like, who? And the problem is there's only one league for MLB and the Hall of Fame. Right, there's so many different wrestling leagues, if you will. That's why, you know, who's WWE really going to give the power to? I mean, former Hall of Famers that Vince doesn't even like. It's why, you know, it's all Vince's playground. It's all, you get to watch this story Vince has in his head that he's still a little kid playing with army figures, basically, and showing you, watch, he's going to stand over here and come out from behind the couch, and then pew, 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 this guy's on a diving mission. He pops up and shoots him, because I'm really just still playing G.I. Joe in my head with 260-pound wrestlers in the ring. And I'll be honest with you, it's entertained me since the early 80s.
No, I get you. And I understand your point, and I agree with it completely. But I think it was either you or Chris that a little bit ago were talking about the draft and how you wish they did what they did, what was that, 2 years ago when they actually had the war rooms from the different USA and Fox. And
as cheesy as it was.
And you would have liked that for aesthetic. So even if it's like, you know, Pat Patterson or like Briscoe, like anybody older that's still around, because I can't remember which one passed away, because I think one of them did but the other didn't. And, you know, older legends, and you just make them your board of like review board or your Hall of Fame committee, it would be something. It would make it a little more tangible, a little less 12 people go in and we have to announce different Hall of Famers for like a month and a half and
so
draw it out.
You're not saying you want slight legitimacy. You're okay with the dog and pony show, though, when it really just comes down to
that's fake, wrestling is a dog and pony show.
I get it. So you want a little more pomp and circumstance around it. I understand. That's fair.
I said that's one of the few legitimate things that I still love about baseball. And by that, I just mean, like, baseball, watching it's a little boring. But the legitimacy of the Hall of Fame, where you can have people like Daryl Strawberry or whatever, it took a while to get in. Like, Ken Griffey Jr. is a slam dunk, but it looked like it'll take, like, Kenny Lofton a little bit if people have to, like, really get over the hump, be like, he was good, but was he that good? Or, like, David Justice kind of stuff.
So
or, like, John Kruk or whatever.
Here's a proposal, then, for something that you might like, and they can maybe actually do this. Every living Hall of Famer gets to pick five people that they would put into the Hall of Fame that aren't in the Hall of Fame every year. And then you tabulate that up and come up with, and then like the three that get the best, most votes go in. And then you can have
over a percentage, like 70% or 75 or whatever. Yeah, I get you. I would like that as just a dog and pony show bullshit kind of thing, even if it's not legit. even if they don't like show their ballot every fucking week on Twitter or whatever, be like, oh yeah, Ric Flair voted for this and he took like a Snapchat of it or some shit like that. I don't give a fuck. Like, well, but like the concept like, is actually sound, I think.
Yeah, if they made it, what if they just made it five people get in every year and that's it? And the Hall of Fame, people who are already in the Hall of Fame pick three by doing some kind of vote and percentage, and then Vince picks two.
That works, especially since you have all the extra awards now, like the Warrior Award and the what the Sujin G. Komen thing that they kind of do, I think, is something. And now, if they really do something for like Shad, or just give him the Warrior Award next year, or whenever the next time they do it, like it, there's plenty of awards to go around where it can still be a little conflated. But I would like a little more dog and pony show.
Folks, we will be right back to talk about the wrestling action from Survivor Series.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Well, it seems like this always happens when Chris is not on the show, and this could just be a gimmick I continue to do, but Survivor Series, for as underwhelming as the paper card was, aside from maybe Asuka versus Sasha, I did actually enjoy the show. It wasn't as much as I enjoyed Hell in a Cell, but it was a solid show. Drew versus Roman was a good match. New Day Street Profits stole the show, in my opinion. Like we saw on paper, we actually got a decent turnout for Sasha. Asuka was really great. Sure, there were certain things that were filler or shitty, like Lashley and Zayn, but like generally speaking, it was a really good show, and I can't really complain too much, because yeah, and you know, personally, gimmick wise, I love the fact that Lana went over as Soul Survivor. I thought that was adorable, how they just kind of like, you don't move, don't fuck this up, and it worked. She won. And like Nia and Bianca's face afterwards was fucking fantastic.
Well, it looks like if you move the storyline forward through Raw, that Lana and Asuka are probably going to get a title shot at Shayna and Nia, which is interesting. Maybe they do a thing where, you know, the world title's on the line as well at the next pay-per-view, and whoever gets the pinfall, their team wins the tag titles and that person is the world champion. So you could see a match where Lana pins Shayna and wins the world title from Asuka and they become tag team champions. Think about shit like that.
I know I've seen TNA do that a little bit when they had the knockouts belts initially, and that's always fun. Whenever it's you lose a tag match and you lose your actual belt, which that's really good. Like, I can't even complain about that. Like, I was trying to think of maybe an angle which I didn't like it, but that would be perfect because it would protect Asuka. It would make Lana kind of look like a bit of a liability. And it's good to put the belt on somebody new and then have Asuka chase, because Asuka's fun chasing.
Listen, the likely thing, though, with WWE booking would be that, you know, if Shayna or Nia pin Lana, they retain their tag titles. If they pin Asuka, they become champion. And the fact that if Asuka's team wins, Asuka would keep her belt. That's likely a WWE thing. I don't ever see the belt going on Lana.
Yeah, no, I can't either. Like, I just, Lana's an aesthetically pleasing, you know, superstar, but good God, she is not a great wrestler. She's improved. I'll give her some credit.
She's
she has
trying,
gotten better.
But her and Billie Kay are about in the same boat.
I was going to say her and Eva Marie are about the same boat, because Billie Kay, I've seen her do all right. Like, Billie Kay can kind of go like an NXT a little bit, but she characterizes in gimmicks too much.
And if you're
Peyton Royce does the same thing.
Well,
Peyton Royce steers into the gimmick too fucking hard sometimes.
I was going to say, though, if you're wondering why Billie Kay and Peyton Royce aren't together anymore, is because Peyton Royce is far and above, way past Billie Kay's talent in the ring.
She's also perceived that way, though.
I'm not saying Peyton Royce is one of the best women's wrestlers or even in the top 50 in the world.
No.
But when you're comparing Billie Kay and Peyton Royce abilities in the ring and actual wrestling flow and enjoyability and, you know, believability, it's not even close.
I'll give you that one. But Peyton was also kind of always billed as the lead in that tag team. Like they, she was the prettier one. She was more of the main attraction. You know, just generalizing. I don't care which one people like. I'm not saying one's insanely more attractive than the other, because like we're not even going to judge that way. But I'm just, Peyton was always kind of at the forefront, and people would always mention how attractive Peyton was and all this other shit. And Billy was just kind of the best friend.
Right.
And
no,
just like William Regal said in his jokey little clip that was on Twitter when he was talking about what the hell was it, the Io Shirai Rhea match or whatever the hell it was, and he just kind of ends it with, I ain't never seen two pretty best friends, and he just kind of gives that all girlfriend kind of look and walks away. And it's just like, it's very true. There's usually the pretty one and the not so pretty one, and Billy gets saddled as the not so pretty one most of the time.
I'll give you all of that from an overall perspective. My point was almost more specifically like, it's just too bags of bones working in the ring take every personality and everything away. No, do you know what I'm saying? It's weird to say it like that, but like,
she's a little gangly and awkward at times.
No. I'm talking about like watching them specifically just work in the ring. Take away the personality, take away the character, take away the looks, take away the push. Just watching them actually work in the ring, it's not even close.
I'll be honest, I haven't really paid attention to one of their matches in a while. Like, the last one that I enjoyed was the tag team, Hell in a Cell, or Elimination Chamber that they were in. Mm-hmm. That's what it was.
Yep.
Which they both did pretty well. So, after that, they were, like, off of TV for, like, fucking forever because of, I don't know, quarantine or whatever they were doing. And they came back and they never felt like they kind of got into a flow again. So, I don't know if that just hurt Billy more. So, she just kind of lost whatever momentum she had and then just kind of phoned it in a little bit. But I'll agree, for sake of argument, that Peyton is more talented, generally speaking. But it's not like there's a huge gap. You know what I mean? We're talking like the difference between like 15th and 20th.
Anything you want to touch on with Sasha Banks here?
Oh, a lot of things, but that's for a different podcast.
Hey now. Nice beaver.
No, but that was a good match. Like that was a good match though. Like I enjoyed it. It was technical, and then it ends with, you know, it ends with what, the roll up. So that was really nice. Where it's clean, but it's not clean. So it's like she caught Asuka and didn't straight up beat her for dominance. And I like that. And I've always kind of been on the Sasha team of, she's a good wrestler. She just really, really, either gets too full of herself or tries to do a little too much, and then she ends up looking like a moron when she like catches her foot on every dive she's ever done, or just, you know, looking a little awkward mid something here or there. So, and then that just gets her a bad rap.
Did you watch Raw last night, or from Monday? I mean,
I only watched a couple clips, like mainly the Firefly Funhouse and so Alexa and Nikki.
You didn't see any of the New Day Hurt Business tag team match?
I did not.
That went to two.
Wait, before Survivor Series or like a couple days ago? A
couple days ago.
Oh, I didn't know they ran that back again. Okay, no.
Yeah, they did. A New Day retained. It was just, it seemed like either they were planning a storyline where they kept messing up, but like it was just not good. Cedric Alexander, Shelton Benjamin, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. He's been in the business forever, and I just see him flub lines and mess up storylines in the ring. Like, they were supposed to, what was it supposed to be? They were supposed to win by countout, and it ended up being, Hurt Business was supposed to win by countout, and it ended up being a double countout. So the announcer said double countout, but the announcers at the table talked about how the Hurt Business won, and MVP got on the mic and said, "You're gonna really let us win like that?" As if they messed up and Shelton never got back in the ring on time. And Kofi stayed out. They were both out. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, that happened. So, like, the MVP's on the mic going, "You're going to let us win like that?" And Kofi's standing up at the ring and going, "You didn't beat us. It was double count out." And, like, they're standing. And they just, it was horrible. I was like, what is going on? Why is this happening? And then I kept thinking the whole time that they were going to win the belts, even though all this was happening, right? And they didn't, thank God. So, I'm sorry. I'm just talking about flubs.
No, that's fair. And, I mean, Shelton even flubbed his line a little bit the Raw before Survivor Series.
That's what I'm talking about.
Shelton's never been known as a talker. Let's give him that one.
You have one thing to say when you get there and you're standing there and you just fucking say it. I mean, come on now.
I mean, he could get nervous. You never know. Like, maybe he's just not over stage fright at this point. Talking is different for everybody. I mean, you know, you can't shame people for that nowadays, PC, because you saw people come to like Biden's aid whenever he flubs lines and say he doesn't have dementia. What he does is he has a stutter and he just tries to replace words because he's trying to cover a stutter. And any kind of negative comment about that, you're being ableist. So how dare you be ableist, PC? Maybe Shelton has a stutter. And you just don't know because you're just too busy in your perfect PC world, and you're just being a degenerate. How dare you? You're gonna get canceled.
Shelton Benjamin is 45 years old, and he's been wrestling for 20 fucking years. You can go fuck yourself.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Sierra Hotel, India. Echo Lima, Delta Shield.
Hey folks, listen up, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net. Pins, stickers, illustrations. angrylemonade.net.
This is my yard now.
This is your boy Kenny Killer telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Folks, let's take a trip around the world and check out the global and intercontinental wrestling landscapes. The crowd seems psyched for this, Andrew. Why don't we start halfway around the world in New Japan Pro Wrestling?
Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't really bring that into a Planes, Trains, and Automobiles kind of reference, because it was right there with the trip around the world and could have tied that all in together.
I'm glad you brought that back up, and I will be watching that tonight, actually. I watch every Thanksgiving. I watch Planes, Trains, and Automobiles either on Wednesday or Thursday. I'm not going out on amateur night tonight. Been there too many times. don't need it. And plus with COVID, who knows who's even going to go out and everything else. So going to be hanging back. I did some cooking this morning, but yeah, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. It's the ultimate Thanksgiving movie.
There we go.
Big ups to Del Griffin.
So you have to take a plane, because a train and an automobile will get you to Japan. But regardless, let's just go over real quick World Tag League standings. We've got Shingo Takagi and Sonata are currently in first place in the World Tag League. It's been amusing. Like, their matches have been all right. World Tag League has not lit the world on fire, which is kind of part of the reason why I'm not exactly in love with watching it. But at least Takagi and Sonata have been funny, because Takagi's not used to talking as much as he has to, because Sonata does the stoic cold skull, I don't talk, I'm too pretty and too cool for this kind of thing. So Shingo gets to talk a little more and show some of his comedy chops, which harkens back to his Dragon Gate days when he was actually the final Owari Gate champion, which is the comedy belt, which you actually had to do goofy comedy matches, which is just amusing to think about.
So do you think WWE had a belt like that, Santino would have won it?
Probably, but R-Truth has it right now, because that's basically the 24/7 title.
There you go. Fair enough. I wish Santino was still healthy. I would love to see a match for that 24/7 title between R-Truth and Santino.
Well, I mean, Santina did make an appearance, and I know Santino's done... or under his real name, whatever his real name is, something Corelli or whatever it is, because I think he did Bloodsport, one of Josh Barnett's things, one or two Bloodsports ago, or at least he was maybe aware for, or like he was signed for it, but that might have been the one that got canceled because of COVID. So if he's good enough to do Bloodsport, he might be in a little better shape, but that could also just be a played out gimmick at the moment. So World Tag League's not the only tournament going on at the moment in New Japan. We've also got Best of Super Juniors because they're doing them both at the same time. And that's a lot closer. It's kind of a three-way tie, you know, not including tiebreakers and stuff like that. But Hiromu Takahashi, Taiji Ishimori, and Master Wato in all of his blue glory have 8 points. So with each one has, it looks like, one match left. Or, no, actually, four matches left. I can't count. So there could be a little boom mix-up there because there's a lot of closeness. There's two people with a big old donut with Doki and Yuya Uemura, the young lion. But you got a lot of sixes, you got some fours, you got the 3/8s. It's still kind of anyone's game with all the matches left.
So New Japan's clearly, obviously, in their home stretch heading towards Wrestle Kingdom. What's the biggest, you know, undetermined thing that's left out there for fans of New Japan Wrestling leading into Wrestle Kingdom? Because a lot of the things have just shored up as far as, like, you know, the top belts.
I mean, I think the biggest question that most people have is Moxley going to show the fuck up? Like, you know, because depending, I think they still have their 2-week holding period for quarantine. So maybe that could play into how AEW works next week, because I think that's Omega's challenge, is the 2nd of December. So if Omega wins, that could then open up Moxley to take a little bit of time off, go to Japan, maybe drop that belt, because I don't know how much they'd want him to lose the U.S. title as their world champion. So that kind of seems like how that's going to play out.
I think this is a perfect time to, and we can spend a little time on New Japan. We don't have to dig into everything else, but do you think that AEW was set to have a larger relationship with New Japan than they were able to have, considering what happened with COVID? Because when they started their federation, there was probably 4 or 5 months before everything got ramped up, and, you know, I know what was going on out there, but those negotiations go back months before that. I feel like that has really hurt AEW, to be honest with you.
Save big this holiday season, all in the Kroger app.
Buy 2 get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit 2, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
I'm pretty sure, given the way I understand how New Japan works and the feelings they were more jaded from,
you think so?
Omega and the Bucks leaving. They I don't think they're receptive. Like, they're receptive to each individual wrestler and opening up for them. Like, Moxley has a personal contract with New Japan and AEW that they had to kind of work that out. Jericho had a contract before AEW was a thing. None of this is really AEW implemented this contract, and that's why they're doing it. It's all stuff that, as soon as Moxley was released, he wanted to do G1, so he made sure he got with New Japan. Tony Khan didn't set that up. And because of the bad blood, and because they're not over, I mean, probably because, also partially because Impact kind of burned them last time they did like a talent swap or kind of a lending, they might be a little more apprehensive.
So is
you never know.
Is ROH still the only company to really successfully do great business with New Japan simultaneously? I mean, I'm totally looking at this from a state's point of view, because New Japan does not need anything from America whatsoever. They're going to thrive in Japan no matter what. But companies that aren't WWE seriously get a gigantic boost. I mean, if you look at like the end of the height of ROH, when you had the Elite and everything else, there was talent coming back and forth all over the place.
ROH has probably done it the best. And that is to ROH's detriment, though, because if you think about it, who were the biggest draws? The Elite, Cody, Like whenever Tanahashi showed up, Shinsuke drew when he was there. AJ was a big draw. You really don't get the ROH guys. They didn't really put, you know, Briscoes on top over too many of the New Japan guys. They got kind of clumped in with it. You didn't really get Taven going over New Japan guys. He just kind of went over on the mixed show. But
here, just so we all know, yes, I'm a bit of an ROH guy. Not lately, but once Taven started being, and I don't really have anything against Taven, honestly. It's just a turning point in the company for me. I mean, Dalton Castle goes out and he's injured and he was your champion, and then Taven, and that's pretty much was the end of ROH for me.
I agree, because I like Dalton Castle. Dalton Castle's got a good look. He had good charisma. I like what he brings. And Taven was never the guy to me. Like, he's just kind of always a B-plus player, to, you know, coin the WWE phrase that they use about Daniel Bryan. But I don't know. ROH is trying to find its legs, and the problem is I think they kind of cut their legs out from underneath them because of New Japan, because they put so much focus and stock into pushing them. Shit, I think, what, Juice and Finley were in, what was it called, Bloodline or something like that? Or it was some Life's Blood, some shit.
No, it was Bloodline. I think, I'm pretty sure it was Bloodline. That was recently. That was about 8 to 12 months ago.
That was like right before COVID, yeah. And like right at the end, like during that Taven reign, and they were getting pushed as big players, you know. And it's, if you're pushing Juice and Finley as relevant, what's that say? What's that really say?
There is still talent there. There are still some people that are really talented that'll never make it to AEW or WWE, and then there are other talents there that could, but it's just not anywhere near what it was at its height, or not even anywhere near what it was maybe 3 years ago.
Yeah, no lies detected. I agree.
Last thoughts on New Japan?
I can't wait for them to get done doing this double tournament thing, because the tournament's not stacked. The people are kind of... The matches are a little lackluster, aside from one or two here or there. And the show goes on too damn long, because it's 5 matches from each tournament. So that's a 3-hour at least show of 80% mediocrity. So I'm like, eh. Totally. I don't. If I wanted this, I'd watch Raw.
Yeah, oh, I was going to say, it sounds like Raw over the summer. Let's...
That's my boy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah... I'll just say Raw has been pretty darn good the last 8 of the last 10, and SmackDown's been pretty good like 9 out of the last 10, but that's just me. I'm a WWE guy. Let's move forward. Let's talk about a company that has had or is going to have, depending on what you know or don't know, a really good championship match, MLW.
Oh, I think that was last week, because I don't actually know what their card is for this week, so I should probably look that up as we're doing this. But they had, from what I understood...
Well, while you're looking that up,
was Jacob, a really good match last week.
Yeah, Jacob Fatu taking on Davey Boy Smith, Jr. Yep. So, I mean, let's put it down... Let's start with this here. Platt thinks Fatu should be in WWE. What do you think?
I mean, it wouldn't hurt him. He's got that Umaga kind of look. If they kind of just gave him the wild Samoan kind of gimmick, which is, yes, borderline racist, borderline played out, don't get me wrong. But it works, and it would also be a decent challenge if Roman takes this head of the table thing for a while and maybe beats Rock at Mania, if that's where we're headed. Somebody else from the family who can actually challenge him, like a Jacob Fatu, it'd be an interesting way to make him real quick, because he's big, he's athletic, and like I said, he's got that Umaga kind of look. So we know that already resonates with most of the fans, because Umaga was never unpopular, if you really get what I'm saying.
No, Umaga was great. I mean, just remembering Umaga, Rikishi was one of the guys that came out for Undertaker as well. You think about like Yoko, a lot of people still don't know Yokozuna is Samoan. So it's like, you know,
he's not Japanese. What are you talking about? What?
So it's just, these guys can work and they have a look and a shape. I mean, go back and watch Yokozuna in his AWA days. Man, he was even, he's probably 30, 40 pounds lighter than he was when he first started in WWE. Watch him move back then. But anyway, Jacob Fatu, I think I agree with Platt. I would love to see that. I'd almost like to see him get brought into the family first and be the one that Roman pushes away or something has a feud with.
I get that. I do. And it's interesting. I don't know where they're going to go with it, with the Roman thing after, because you have to assume if they do the Rock thing, Rock is going to put him over. So then what do you do? Do you make sure Joe is healthy and just have it be like a Samoan, you know, Samoan fight? And like, instead of like, he's not part of the Fatu family, but at least since he's Samoan, it's fight for the island kind of thing. And then Fatu could maybe come in as Samoa Joe's reinforcement. Maybe then turn on Joe because he's part of the family. You know, there's a lot of ways they could do it. I don't know what Fatu's contract looks like because I want to say he got re-signed to a similar contract that Hammerstone did where it was like a decent couple-year extension during COVID because MLW tried to lock them both up because they're the bigger players for MLW.
Let's put it this way, though. I think MLW is in a league underneath New Japan and AEW where if WWE really wanted somebody, they'd just buy out the contract or make a deal with MLW for some kind of giving them some kind of network time or play old stuff. Like WWE seems like they could easily go in and take Fatu from MLW if they wanted to, in my opinion. And it doesn't seem like
they
want to.
That's also assuming Fatu wants to.
Right. It doesn't seem like either party's interested right now, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with that assessment right there because I know Hammerstone recently did the interview with Chris Van Vliet. And he talked about kind of liking the fact of being the top guy to try to carry a company up instead of getting kind of lost in the wash in a bigger one. I think he talked about failing his tryout 3 times at WWE anyway. So it's one of those interesting things that I think MLW's got a good crew that's actually loyal to the brand. And while Fatu would thrive in WWE, I'm not disagreeing with you or Chris at all. I don't see it anytime soon, but I could see an angle if they wanted to, but I just don't see it anytime soon.
Well, shout out to AJ Kirsch, and let's hit the other side of that championship card from last week. What about Davey Boy Smith? I mean, this is a guy who had, you know, aspirations of WWE and things of that nature. He's made a good career for himself on the upper indie scene, if you want to say that, for the most part. I don't know, is that an accurate assessment?
Well, depends on what you consider Japan.
I mean, he had a... Well, I'm talking about in America.
Because, I mean, he made most of his relevancy back in Japan. When he was in Pro Wrestling Noah, that's where the Killer Elite Squad started, and the Suzuki-gun thing.
Right.
Then he brought that over to New Japan, because the whole gimmick with Suzuki-gun at that time was they were banished to Noah. So then they had to come back, and they made the big thing.
At some point, he had a cup of coffee with Jake.
Yes, exactly. You good now?
I'm really proud of myself for that one. Sorry. Go ahead. Why don't you finish up our MLW talk?
So, yes, Davey Boy's made a better name for himself outside of WWE, be it if you want to consider it Japan or the upper indies, whatever you consider that. And, I mean, I'm struggling for a sentence because he's not exactly the youngest horse in the barn anymore. So does he even want the WWE thing? Like, is this just going to be his thing where he's going to be the enforcer kind of the upper indies or of like the quote unquote B team? Because like I could see he would do great in Impact. He does great in MLW. He'd be really good in ROH if they had a thing. I mean, AEW would probably fuck him up, so let's not put him there because he's over 6'1". So let's just kind of keep him elsewhere.
I feel like he is enjoying what he's doing and having the freedom to do what he wants, where he wants, when he wants. Shorter term contracts. I'm guessing there is plenty of business for him with that name, and he's making plenty of money doing it wherever he wants. So kudos to him. I just wish I could see him in a bigger spot personally.
That's a fair desire because I'd like to see him flourish on a bigger stage too, but like you said, he's enjoying it. He was able to bring the Heritage Cup back, which obviously means something to him and the family and the lineage, so I think he's in a good spot.
Let's delve into NWA real quick. I know they've been doing a lot of things back and forth with UWN. People have been going around and around, and they got something new coming up.
They do. So I don't know if it was announced on UWN because I didn't watch that show yet, but I know I saw it on Twitter, was that they decided to announce that they're going to return to weekly episodic content, and they're going to call the show Shockwave. So this is not the soup from the boys that got destroyed. This is their new show. I guess they decided to move away from Power, call it something different. Joe Galli was promising new matches that we haven't seen. Granted, I don't know if that means that's pre-tapes from before that never made air, and they're just going to give us kind of old stuff, because to be fair, I don't even know who the hell is still signed with NWA besides like Nick Aldis and like what, Aaron Rex, whoever wants to play the question mark, and maybe Elijah Burke, because he's the national champion or whatever the hell it is. So like, who the fuck does NWA have? Like, I mean, Serena Deeb's in AEW. She signed with them before she won the NWA Women's Championship.
I have sad.
But what do you do?
I have sad breaking news. Soccer legend Diego Maradona dies at age 60.
Holy shit! What?
I just came across the bottom line on ESPN.
Did they say how?
I know. I was waiting to see that, and they did not.
Oh, here I thought you were going to be a bit of a troll and just say there's only going to be two games of football on Thanksgiving because they had to move Ravens versus Steelers because of COVID.
That is another. That's another bit of breaking news. But we'll cheers our beers to Diego Maradona.
Yeah. Shit.
And we'll take a.
I'm obviously not the biggest soccer fan, but that I do know that name. That's kind of big. And 60's not that old anyway, so shit.
Heart attack, apparently. 1986 World Cup, won the Golden Ball. Take a brief moment of silence for Diego Maradona, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
This is your boy, Kenny Killer, telling you to make sure you check out TheChairShot.com. Bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, TheChairShot.com.
Impact Wrestling, Andrew, you do a great job covering it. I always enjoy reading what you got going on over there. I'm not always able to catch up with what's happening with Impact. I appreciate what your brother's doing with WWE as well. I enjoy both your writings, but Impact. What's going on? Talk to me, Goose.
Well, I mean, Impact didn't lose that love and feeling yet, so we don't have to go into any kind of a montage of singing or kind of
whoa,
like a musical.
Whoa, that love and feeling.
Whoa, now you got me started. Stop that. That's like
that
a Chris thing to start singing.
And feeling now it's gone. Whoa.
Yeah. Anyway, so speaking of losing that love and feeling, which is actually an awkwardly perfect segue, we know who shot Johnny Bravo, because Rosemary decided to confess the fact that she never had that love and feeling for Johnny Bravo. She just wanted that virgin blood because of, you know, the demonic kind of cliches and stereotypes where virgins give power to evil beings and spirits and shit. And apparently the person that shot him was not Rosemary. It was Larry D's alter ego that we were introduced to in Wrestle House, Lawrence D. And the reason why we knew it was him is because Johnny Bravo didn't die, and he came back to interrupt the wrestler's court, and he said he smelled him. So that was a reference back to the ring rust cologne that he was wearing. Yes, that was kind of my reaction. I'm like, it was so fucking stupid. It took the piss out of the whole angle, and I'm just like, really? That's what we go with. Like, I kind of appreciate all the loose ends being tied up with, but ugh.
Can we go back to how excited they were when they first came up with this idea, but failed to realize how excited people would be when he got shot, and then the letdown would be when they actually explained it? Like, did they not see the disconnect there?
I don't know. Like, that's my problem, is because I kind of loved the lead up to a degree in the court, because Madison Rain was his defense attorney, because the excuse was she's the only person in the company that kind of likes him. So they actually had Matt Stryker on commentary for that episode, and I miss Stryker. I love Stryker's work. Like, they need to use him more. They need to get Matthews off the fucking desk and just have Stryker with Callis or Stryker with Rain or somebody. Because Matthews isn't the worst. Let me be honest here. His nerdy kind of Michael Cole way of doing commentary is fine, but it needs to be carried. And if you don't have that strong personality to kind of call him a nerd and then kind of make interesting color remarks, he gets really, really annoying and grating, and then you just kind of get sick of hearing his voice. So, full credit, multiple kudos to Madison Rain for being able to marry him and hear that voice daily, and in other kind of facets that we don't even want to imagine what that sounds like. Could you imagine Josh Matthews' pillow talk?
I was just going to say, how many times has she asked him, can you just turn the commentary off for 15 minutes so he can fuck?
Yeah. She's like, just shut your mouth and fuck. That's not it.
Usually it's the guy. Shit. Usually it's the guy going, shh. But it's Madison Rain just placing her finger over. Just, shh.
Just, no. You're going to ruin it. But yeah, so. I did like Johnny Swinger's really old, dated kind of references because he came to the hearing in a neck brace. Because he heard it was going to get him sympathy, made a Tommy Rich joke at the end. Then he's just like, you know, he's like, I've got movie deals. I'm like the biggest thing in Impact. I'm like the O.J. Simpson of wrestling. And then Dreamer's like, when was the last time you watched the news? And he goes, I don't know, Daddy, 1991. What? Something happened? And he goes, oh. So there was enough jokes in there that I appreciated, and D'Lo Brown was said to be from the Nation of Litigation. So I kind of liked the little jokes.
Shout out
to it definitely fell flat.
Shout out to D'Lo and Tommy Rich, friends of the chair.
DeLorean Brown.
Friends of the chair shot. Tommy Rich dubbed Tommy Rich dubbed DP and myself Alphabet Soup.
Oh, he's the one that did that. Okay. Mm-hmm. And now you added AJ just to add more letters to the alphabet. There we go. So this is just perfect. Now I understand your idea for co-host now. And that's also why you call Platt CP when he was on DWI. Like, people just can't have names.
I believe in too many cooks in the kitchen.
Fair enough. But yeah, that also kind of works, because that's just kind of how that last Impact episode felt. There's a lot going on. It was a lot of entertainment. Swoggle was the phenomenal uncle that Carl Anderson brought out.
I heard about that.
They dedicated nicely. Like, they steered into the whole AJ Styles skit because they played as Tron. They played the old Get Ready to Fly Grits rap version. And then Swoggle comes out in AJ Styles pants and the gloves and everything. Even starts out the match doing the AJ Styles strike blitz with the back fist and everything. But Ethan Page ended up screwing himself because he got overly confident, cocky, got distracted, then got rolled up by the wee nominal AJ Swoggle.
Oh, my God.
Wee nominal. Yes. So
Swoggle's in one of my, like, probably top 10 favorite matches ever.
You need to extrapolate, buddy.
WLC. I have a mark for WLC.
You know, that explains so much.
Oh, it come really on. Does. WLC is great.
Oh, Jesus. But yeah, so I don't know. Impact was marginally entertaining.
Hold on.
It wasn't the best episode, but
I say that from a Talking Chopamania perspective.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's better. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. No, that's fine, because I love the Lucha Libre death match between Chico's team and Chavo's team. That will probably go down as one of my favorite things ever, and that was just so moronic, but it was perfect. And Twilight Zone-y. So I get what you're getting at. But yeah, so Impact's still fine. It's still trucking along. The last episode fell flat a little to me, and I just hope it recovers, which it should. They've got plenty of storylines going on. They just need to get away from this fucking shoe-shot Johnny Bravo bullshit. Yeah, there's that. Hopefully Joe Doring keeps doing his good work, because I love Killer Joe in All Japan. You know, he's multiple-time Triple Crown champion. He's won their tag league, their tag titles. He's fucking serious. Like, even though people in the States don't know him, and people were trying to run him down as, like, Bradshaw Light, or who is this dorky cowboy-looking motherfucker, he is more like Stan Hansen Light, and not that light. Like, he's athletic, He's huge. He will fucking kill you if he cares. I've seen him pull off some lazy matches, but so far in Impact, he looks motivated, and he looks like he lives up to the Killer Joe moniker. That's all I'm saying. So watch out for Doring to do some pretty big things in Impact.
All right, folks, that has been our trip around the world via plane, train, and automobile. Make sure you check that movie out. This weekend, we'll be right back to wrap up the show.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
They want to hear the Thanksgiving song, huh?
Fuck yeah, they want to hear it.
This is a Thanksgiving song. I hope you enjoy it. Love to eat turkey. Love to eat turkey. I love you. Love to eat turkey, 'cause it's good. Love to eat turkey like a good boy should, 'cause it's turkey to eat. So good. That clapping's messing my head up, man. I appreciate it, but I was trying to think of the next line. I'm like, all I hear is clapping. Here we go. Thanks anyways. Turkey for me, turkey for you. Let's eat the turkey in my big brown shoe. Love to eat the turkey at the table. I once saw a movie with
Betty Grable. Andrew, we record on Thanksgiving Eve. The show will post, excuse me, Thanksgiving Eve, or Thanksgiving night, I'm sorry. Man, ugh. I took my shoe off and threw myself off.
I wasn't even clapping, so that's good.
Yeah, but I can't blame you. I can't blame that or the sun.
Before you continue your line of thought, we have more not wonderful breaking news, I think, because it just popped up on my news feed.
No, what?
That you don't need to play the music, but it's apparently Bob Ryder passed away, who was the co-founder of TNA with Jeff Jarrett.
Oh, wow.
And Jerry Jarrett, that kind of thing. So, not exactly a hugely known name, but there's an irony of coming off talking about Impact, and then my phone's just like, this person passed away. I'm like, why do I know that name? Oh, yeah. So, founder of OneWrestling.com, co-hosted WCW Live in the late 90s, and co-founded TNA with Jeff and Jerry in 2002. So, you may not know the name, but, you know, at least the company's still going strong and had an impact on the wrestling world, universe, whatever you want to call it, community.
Yeah, I mean, from everyone at the Chair Shot, we give our condolences, friends and family. 2020 continues to do what it does. It's even more reason to be thankful at this time, and thankful for what you have and the family and the friends that you do have and things of that nature, because it could always be worse, folks. It could always be worse. Speaking of Thanksgiving, I've talked with many of people right here on this very Chair Shot Radio Network, and I want to know where you're going and what you're taking.
Ah, well, you see, this is the beauty of having a small family and a smart, marginally disconnected family, where I'm actually just doing a quiet Thanksgiving. I'm just kind of sticking here with myself. Adam's going to go with his mother, so... I don't know. I'm just gonna enjoy some football, enjoy a little bit of turkey breast, and really, really play it low key because I don't want to be bothered. I don't want to bother anybody. I'm kind of, because I could have made plans. Unlike Adam, I do make plans ahead of time, in case anybody's wondering why DWI's name was Aaron. What are we doing for Thanksgiving last week? I do normally make plans ahead of, and so this is a fully aware and cognizant moment of I'm just going to leave people alone and do my own thing this year, especially with COVID and stuff like that. I just let's save the big happy bullshit for next year. What about you, bud?
I prepared some things when I got home this morning already. So a little 7-layer salad, some bacon wrapped water chestnuts to take over to the uncle's house, and
oh, that's nice.
Yeah, can you name the 7 layers in a 7-layer salad?
I can't. Can
well,
you?
There's salad. I hope so. I just made it.
Well, I don't know how much you've drank so far today. That's what I'm asking if you can.
I'm just going to recount what I did. There's salad. That's one. Then there's celery. Celery. Chopped celery. Green peppers. There's peas. There's cheese. There's bacon. And what's the 7th one? I'm missing one. Oh, and red onions.
Everything sounds good. The peas are a little weird in a salad. But like,
I didn't say them in order of the
layers. It doesn't sound
layers.
Unappetizing. It just sounds weird.
It's you make it in layers. So like, first it's the salad, then it's the celery, then it's the green peppers, then the peas make a sheet above that. Then you put mayo on top of the that, cover that up. Then you got the red onion, and then you got the bacon and the cheese right on top. Oh, so good.
Okay.
You put a little sugar
with
in the middle.
With that kind of a display, that actually looks... That sounds really good.
Oh, yeah. When you cut it and look at it, it's...
I mean, bacon and cheese make most things better, so, like...
Right on
you can't
top,
really
brother.
Complain about that.
Right on top to bring people in.
Exactly. So, that's cool. That's nice. You keeping it small with the uncle, or...
It's
going to be the normal?
It's me, my mom, and stepdad, my sister, her husband. They're 10-month-old. My aunt and uncle, they have 2 boys. One of them has a girlfriend. That's everybody. And no one's really doing anything. No one's been going anywhere. Everybody works from home pretty much. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's good. At least it's still mostly safe, even though it's a decent number of people. And that's cool.
And we're all gonna wear a full suit of knight's armor. So it's going to sound like...
Let's see, but it's not a hazmat suit, so they're still going to get you for that. That's not protective enough. What's your problem? So let's just hope that, you know, y'all have fun, stay safe, keep everybody's thoughts and safety in mind, and I don't know what the hell that noise was, but everybody probably heard it.
My computer said, Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Oh, that's so nice of the computer. Listen to that. Now kill it before Skynet takes over. Speaking of kill it, let's kill the show. So you can find me on Twitter at IWC Warchief and on the Chair Shot with different articles that just, if it's not WWE or ROH, I probably do it. Tunny, will your computer let you talk?
I hope so. You can find me at PC Tunny. You can find me all over TheChairShot.com. Follow Christopher Platt at The Real C. Platt. Head on over to TheChairShot.com. Sports, entertainment, and sports entertainment. There's something for everyone. Use your head.
Happy Thanksgiving. Eat turkey like a good boy should. Let's get going.
Save big this holiday season, all in the Kroger app.
Buy 2 get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit 2, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.